AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we are exploring life without Sherlock in Watson on Sky Witness, reenacting the imprisonment of Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe in Prisoner 951 on BBC One, and reuniting with newly minted National Treasure Alan Carr in the third series of Changing Ends on ITV. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters in a week that is, as an antidote to the past weeks, somewhat slow for television. However, we shall do our best to make it entertaining for you regardless, and that will be helped by three things, three very special things. One is National Treasure Boyd Hilton, who is sitting right here. Two is Kay Ribeiro, who is sitting right there. And three is the box of chocolates that Kay has brought with her to this week's recording session, which, and this is absolutely true, technically belong to our editor, Darren.
Yes. So these were the chocolates that I very excitedly was brandishing at King's Cross to go up to Leeds University to give a talk there, journalism talk. And all the trains got cancelled. And this was destined for Darren to say a big thank you for all he does.
Let's look at them. So these are Lindt chocolates. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't like them that much.
Classic. What
does that mean? Okay, so I imagine you won't want any then.
Hold on. Why are you dissing Lindt?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not Milk Tray, is it?
Oh my God, wait, you're saying milk tray is better than
milk? I'm sorry, dairy milk is the king of chocolates.
Okay, you're insane.
That's just a fact.
You are.
I mean,
just a fact.
You being a connoisseur of chocolates on the same level as you being a connoisseur of comedy, frankly.
Like, you know when people go to, like, Hotel Chocolat and all those various things? I'd be like, honestly, fuck that. Give me a slab of dairy milk and I am happy. That's all I need.
You're
I like
a basic binge of chocolate.
Yeah, also, I like the way you kind of pronounce it. Hotel Chocolat.
Chocolat.
Ordinary.
He loves an accent.
I do love an accent. Yes. Yeah, I'm offending the French now. It's fine.
I didn't realise you had such common taste when
I'm a real basic bitch when it comes to chocolate. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I've got very...
In every other sense, you're very classy.
He's so snooty-magooty about everything else. And chocolate is his...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even sure that, you know, like, technically it has enough cocoa in it to be proper chocolate.
No,
but
barely.
Yeah, but it's... But dairy milk, there's something about dairy milk. It is the king of chocolates.
Was it ever since the advert where with the gorilla doing the drums to
it would have been
coming in the air tonight.
It would be like the milk tray man who used to milk tray man who used to climb in ladies' windows.
Yes.
And is it a coincidence that he's wearing a black sort of it's not rolled up, but
I'm wearing a cashmere jumper, and it has to be said it's about 27 degrees in this studio today.
So
I'm sweating like an absolute bastard, and this could end particularly badly. So we're gonna hope that the air conditioning kicks in at some point, but I am feeling a little bit like, whew.
Oh, I thought you were channeling your inner Milk Tray Man.
I mean, perhaps that, if he was particularly sweaty and red-faced.
You are very Milk Tray outfit today,
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, alas, it's not a Milk Tray, okay? So it's Lindt.
Okay, well, open them. Come on.
Oh, God, all right. So demanding. First of all, he slags off the box of chocolates I bought in very kindly, generously.
Such is my way.
Donated to the cause.
Maybe in the next live show we do, if we ever do another one, we should do a taste test to see whether you really can tell the difference between, say, Lindt and Cadbury's. And
because anyone could do that.
The thing is, I think he would be able to avoid...
You're saying anyone would tell the difference?
100%. Because
I don't know if
dairy milk
right
chocolate
that.
Tastes like no other chocolate. Like, it's not even close to tasting like chocolate.
I think you'd be surprised, because I think you think how Lindt chocolates are quite sweet, right?
They're not dairy milk chocolate.
Well, almost. It depends. It depends what... They're not like... Whereas Hotel Chocolat... You're right, Hotel Chocolat have various varieties which have more cocoa and less sugar.
Yeah, you can get like 100% cocoa, which is like mainlining it and just
I think we should do a blind taste test soon.
All right. Come on.
All the listeners, apologies. You know, you have tuned into a TV podcast.
Right, yeah.
Somehow it's
now become a chocolate.
You started it.
I like, a panier framboise.
Go on then, shove it
in
your
one of those.
Oh, no, that sounds good.
Let's all have a few moments of silence as he consumes this chocolate. Enjoy that.
I'm going to have that one. And I'm going to have one of these caramel salets as well.
Oh, my God. It's taking two. Wait a minute. How do you know which is which?
Because there's this little box.
Oh, you've got the
thing. Yeah, that's the key.
Okay.
God, this is great broadcast, isn't it? Sorry, everyone.
We wonder why we don't get awards for this podcast.
Awards for live eating of Lindt chocolates. Yes. This is podcast. It's brought to you in association with Lindt. But there's a fine... It's really not. It's really not, because Kay literally had to pay for it.
Espresso Intense sounds good.
Absolutely not.
That sounds right up your street, boys.
Tell us what you've been watching, Kay.
Okay, so I have continued to watch This Country, inspired by, you know, Daisy May and Charlie Cooper. They had their Ghost Show, which I loved, and then it just reminded me about this, the excellence of This Country. So I've been watching that. That's on iPlayer. I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Also, a couple of things I've watched for work, which I've enjoyed, is Chris McCausland Seeing Into the Future. So that's on BBC Two. It's on the 23rd of November. And basically, I'm specifically saying this to you, James, because I know you probably don't know. Chris is a comedian, a blind comedian, who he is very funny. He appeared on Strictly. In fact, he won Strictly. And he's a real tech geek. And basically, this documentary is about his appreciation of technology and how it's really changed his life. It's given him a level of independence, and he goes to America, Silicon Valley, to check out all the new tech available that is going to improve his life vastly. So yeah, I watched that. That was really interesting. That's on the 23rd of November on BBC. I dipped back into The Forsites. So do you remember?
Yes.
The Five drama, the Victorian drama.
Actually surprisingly good.
Yes.
With drama. Inappropriate facial hair.
Yes, and the boxing, the apropos nothing, you know, the man who just starts boxing randomly, whips his top
topless
off. I'm not complaining.
We've all done it.
So yeah, I've continued watching that and I've been enjoying it immensely. That's on Five. And, oh, the last thing is Poison Water on BBC Two. And that's going to be on the 26th of November, another documentary. And if you are...
You know the date, though. This is a new development. Usually, you're looking and going, what is the date of the... You're looking for more chocolate?
I am, yeah.
I mean, okay.
Oh, my God, chocolate monster.
I'm sniffing around for more chocolates.
God, I've given him another excuse not to listen to me,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
What an idiot. Oh, I'm such a doofus.
Ridiculous.
Anyway, right, well, he's like, you know, God... pouring over those. Poison Water, yeah, it's on BBC Two, 26th of November. And for anyone who is outraged by, you know, the sewage being like strewn in our waters, in the sea and everything, and you're already like, you know, it's already boiling your piss, frankly, then if you watch this is all about the 1988 water poisoning in Cornwall, which will further boil your blood, which is... What happened basically was that the chemicals were accidentally poured into the water supply chain of 20,000 people in Cornwall. And the devastating effects of that, the way that the water company didn't act swiftly enough, gave bad advice, the government was sort of like being very... they weren't really taking action because they didn't want to put off the investors. This was just before privatisation of the water companies. And so anyway, I found it fascinating. And I would recommend that. That's on BBC Two.
I'm just going to take a bite of the chocolate before I...
This is awful podcasting.
It is awful.
I don't know why I did this.
You know, one needs to hear slurping, chomping, chewing noises.
No.
No.
And also, they're just the greatest hypocrisy of you, like, snaffling them, having to slag them off.
But I had the good grace to turn my mic down while I slurped over the chocolates.
So you have the power over my... I can't turn my mic down.
There we go. I turned off Boyd. You can't hear him anymore. Oh, God, do you know what? I should exercise this power more often. This is excellent. Anytime you say something I don't agree with now, Boyd, I'm just going to turn your mic down.
Oh, God. Our mics are never going to be on.
That's it. Sorry, Kay, what was that? Couldn't hear you.
You're so...
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I can't hear you, Kay. Speak up. Speak up.
This is how fascism...
This is, This is an authoritarian podcast at this point. All right, shall I talk about what I've been watching since Boyd is chewing on an espresso, whatever it is?
Go on.
So I've watched two things this week. The first one is I have finally finished The Studio. I appreciate it has taken me about 6 months to do it. Well, because it's excruciating. My friend Scheimer was firing on all cylinders. So while I was... liking it, like it's clearly very good. I really it was very painful for me to watch. It's really good.
You had to microdose it.
Yeah, I had to. And they're quite short episodes.
Because of the cringe factor.
Because of the cringe factor, yes. Mm. But it's very good. And the CinemaCon finale with Zoe Kravitz and Dave Franco is genuinely brilliant.
Yeah, the finale is fantastic.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed that show. Well, enjoyed. It's very, very good. It nearly killed me, but it was...
Has it been recommissioned for a second series?
I believe it's coming back for a second season, yeah.
I've seen they're filming now. Mm. Because there was an interview with what's his name?
Seth Rogen.
Yes, exactly. Talking about how loads of people have come forward, want to do film act directors stars, want to be in it.
They want to be in fictional films in his series.
Yeah, but he's saying, well, it's difficult for us because we have to make sure it works for the whole context of our entire series. We can't just put anyone in. Mm. So, like, really top people are going, can I be in your show? You know, but they're like, sometimes no, you know. Interesting.
That's not a bad problem to have, really.
It is a good problem to have.
Yeah. So I watched that. And the other thing I've done is I've been pressing on with It, Welcome to Derry.
Oh. They had a... Sorry to interrupt.
No,
they had a screening of episode 4.
Yeah, it was quite random, wasn't it?
Why? Yeah, I've never heard. That's unusual.
I mean, it was a good episode, but I don't know why there was a screening of episode 4 in particular. Yeah.
So it wasn't a stunt episode or anything like that.
No, not really. Mm. I mean, it's what I found quite interesting about it now is because I think one of my initial complaints was I don't understand why this is, because like you're repeating the format that we've seen before. But there is an interesting wrinkle to it, as in not just about the mythology, but the approach to it. Specifically, the adult storyline is quite fascinating. The kid's storyline, to an extent, is similar to the kid's storyline from the main story, but there's a twist on that as well. But the adult storyline is really interesting, and it kind of touches on other aspects of the Kingverse, like The Shining and whatnot, which is kind of cool. Okay. So yeah, and it references to Shawshank Prison and whatnot. But so I've been enjoying it. It is properly gnarly though. Like some of the horror sequences, Kay, you wouldn't survive 5 minutes. Like it's really quite grotesque. It's a bit full on. I don't think it has scared me exactly, but it has horrified me. Mm. So I'm enjoying it. Welcome to Derry.
Mm, good picks. Mm. What about you, Boydo?
Thanks for asking, Kay.
Finish your chocolate. How was it?
I have finished. It was delicious.
Good.
Yeah, very nice. Thank you. I finished All Her Fault.
Okay.
Was it a hate watch?
No, it wasn't a hate watch at all. In fact, I'm doing a reverse ferret. I've changed my mind about it because when we reviewed it on this very podcast,
yes,
I thought it was kind of like mid-level of this type of show.
You did. And this, it should be said that this has, it's had one star reviews and it's had people who love it. It has polarized people.
Yeah, it has. And yeah, you're right. Yeah. I think it's really, it ends up being mostly really good. It's certainly much more interesting and different to what I think you might think it is if you watch the first couple of episodes. Because suddenly, about midway through, I would say around episode 5, I think it's episode 5, obviously I never take notes on these things, it becomes like this, like almost like a stage play. All the main characters come together in the house where, you know, of the main couple whose kid has been kidnapped. You know, his siblings, he's got two siblings, her friend, all the kind of suspects, if you like, because you know, I think when we reviewed it, we explained that even that you see who has actually done the kidnapping, but you don't know the full details of the ramifications of that person's awareness of the other main characters in the show. So it's the implication that, all right, we know that this person has done it because it was very early on they show you that person.
They do,
But then it's like, oh, but are any of these other people, who are the main characters, also connected and involved in some way, shape, or form? And there's a heavily hidden that one, at least one of them is. So, and there's this scene where they all gather, almost Agatha Christie-like, not to kind of like thrash out between them what is happening, what's going on, and why they can't kind of solve this crime, why everyone's got secrets they're not honest about and they're not opening up about. And it's a race against time because there's a primetime TV crew about to arrive at the house to film
the
couple. So they're arriving to film the couple, talking so they can put as much publicity out there in our primetime true crime TV show type of thing. So the clock is literally ticking and it shows you the clock, or different clocks all the way through the episode, people's watches, people's clocks in their cars, etc.
What other kind of clocks? No, I'm joking.
Yeah,
there's
various types of timepieces, Kay.
Can we get a list?
Yeah, grandfather clock.
As I said, because I don't take notes, I haven't compiled a list, but
right.
I will do.
Okay.
Anyway, the other thing about this episode is that it kind of creeps up on you is that the show is very largely about disability. There are two prominent disabled characters in the show, and which is unusual. It shouldn't be in this day and age. You think, oh, you know, disability should be something that is in, you know, addressed in mainstream TV all the time, much more than it is. But it's almost like one of the final taboos of inclusivity, if you like, I think, is that there's still not enough disabled actors on TV. It's still quite rare. And in this, I say, there are two really interesting disabled characters. And it becomes, in this episode, it becomes a discussion of that. And it's addressed full on.
Oh.
Like, and then there's another subplot with one of the disabled characters. I'm trying not to spoil anything. Which is fascinating and is almost like doesn't have much to do with the main storyline. It's almost like another little story that they put into it,
does it blend in or does it feel shoehorned?
Yeah, no, I think it blends in because certain episodes emphasize certain characters, you know, and that you see more from their point of view. So the detective, for example, the detective character, I don't think this is a spoiler, has got a disabled son. He's trying to get, him and his wife are trying to get their son into the best school for him, for his needs. And that is, it's basically a subplot that turns out to be really, really interesting.
Well, this is all about parenthood, so why wouldn't it be included?
Absolutely, yeah. But some of the some of the turns it takes are wildly mad, right? So that happens as well. There's the madness of it, which is very entertaining. And there are some, I mentioned a red herring in episode one that I thought didn't work. And there's a couple of other red herrings that are really, really kind of just too obvious and too silly. But it's really gripping. It's the characters are kind of really cleverly drawn. The husband, I mean, who knew Isabella, you know Isabella right from the start. His Belinda, he goes even more extraordinarily out of hand. He's a really interesting character. And Sarah Snook, just all the way through, is brilliant. I really liked it.
Remind me what channel it's on.
It's on Sky Atlantic /now.
I can't wait to watch it. My friend actually called me the other night to say she's obsessed with it.
I think it's been a word of mouth hit.
Mm.
I think the people who gave it bad reviews probably hadn't seen the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, I haven't checked. But my review which I thought it was not top level, which I'm now changing, was based on those first couple of episodes. But once you see the whole thing, I think the impact is much more powerful.
Do you know where the term red herring comes from?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think I've got the year because I've looked it up. It's 1807. So it's William Cobbett was a journalist, and he wrote a story about how he used a red herring to throw off dogs to use as a distraction because it obviously smells quite pungent.
Yes,
and it was used as and that popularised the term red herring.
Wow, there's a doggy distraction scene in the next show.
A doggy distraction
scene. Yeah, that I'm going to talk about, which is The Beast in Me. So this is the other big psychological thriller type show, right?
Which I also reviewed.
Matthew Rhys is the neighbour from hell.
Is he or isn't he a psychopath?
Yeah, with those crazy dogs.
Dogs. And there's a scene in which the crazy dogs have to be distracted.
Mm-hmm. By a red herring?
But not via red herring, via others that I won't go into. So I watched more of that. I haven't finished that, but I'm about halfway through. And initially I thought The Beast in Me was better than All Her Faults, but I'm now wavering. I think The Beast in Me has some absolutely ludicrous moments. Whereas to start with, it feels slightly classier, I think, somehow, than All Her Fault.
Because
All Her Fault leans into, to use that terrible phrase, apologies.
It's a great phrase.
To its own slightly over-the-top sensibility, I think. I think it's aware that certain story turns are bonkers.
Banana crackers.
Whereas in this, it's more about the banana crackers extent of him, of Matthew Rhys. How banana crackers is he?
Yeah.
There is a birthday party scene in episode two, I think, in which there's an elephant booked to take part in the kid's
birthday. An elephant in the room.
An elephant in, literally there's an elephant in the room, in their kind of castle-like home where his dad lives. But I am really enjoying it, having said that. And I think plan on finishing it this weekend because it's also really good fun. So we've got two, I think, really well done, well made, classy, fun, brilliantly acted kind of psychological thriller shows, The Beast in Me and All Her Fault, which I think both vying with each other for outstanding quasi ludicrous thrillers of the year.
The new list that
I myself am making, and only me. I haven't finished yet. You'll be pleased to know.
He's unstoppable.
I went to Stranger Things premiere, which was after last week's record.
Yes.
And it's entirely heavily embargoed until, I think it's like the halfway through the day before, but we still can't include it, I think, in our yet.
So we will do Stranger Things and we will do it on the main podcast. Yeah. We'll just have to do it the week after.
Yeah. But what can I say? But the premiere was funny, but I just wanted to mention that this is more, so I can't say anything about it. Apart from it was about 80 minutes long.
Yeah.
They showed episode one, interestingly, and the first 8 minutes, I think, one of the Duffer brothers said of episode two, but we didn't know where the cut was because it ran on. Yeah. So that was interesting.
The first eight minutes of episode two.
Indeed. What else can I say? The event was funny though, because
were there any good snacks?
There was some decent popcorn, I would say. I mean, that's it, pretty much. That's the main snack. Better than the lemonade-flavoured popcorn they served
at the Wicked screening,
which was disgusting.
I ate all of it.
It was hideous,
really?
Though.
Yeah.
Oh, classic you. I mean, just you've really upped your...
waste myth.
Since your sugar, self-imposed sugar ban, you've really upped the
I'm having a bit of a feast or famine, so I'm generally being quite good, but then Kay will bring lint chocolates into the podcast.
This is your personality type all over.
Yeah, it really is.
one extreme to another.
Yes.
Trying to cope with it.
Yeah. Look, I was in there. I had to sit through 2.5 hours of Wicked.
I mean,
so I was going to eat some sugar. I don't know what to tell you.
I just thought the lemonade probably didn't work.
It wasn't nice, but it was there.
It was, okay.
Yeah.
This is like the Netflix. I mean, to be fair, the Netflix snacks were amazing at the What's Up Next event. Yeah. That's like him in the bloody pick a mix.
When's the next one of those?
Soon, hopefully.
Yeah, but this is what happened at the premiere that I just wanted to mention because I thought it was really funny. And people are going to go, oh, you know, talk about first world media premiere problems. The big cinema in Leicester Square is where the Stranger Things premiere took place. They did a brilliant job. The people who do all the marketing and of recreating the world of Stranger Things in Leicester Square, it was incredible. I took some photos. I put some photos up on Instagram. They did a brilliant job with all that. It looked amazing. You walk even in the lobby was like entering into the world of Stranger Things, into the Upside Down, and even like the security guards almost had to play along with it. But what was unfortunate was. So, you know, you're encouraged to arrive at a certain point and take your seat by a certain time, wherever it was, 7 o'clock or something. It was due to start at 8. And you wanted, and you picked up your ticket and then you went in and you had to give up. You had to put your phone in one of these pouches where you can't take, you have to go afterwards when the film finishes to get them to unlock it.
Yeah.
So basically, no one calculated this. No one kind of really knew this was
going
to happen.
Oh, I know where this is going. So you just raw dogging.
So you arrive, exactly. So you arrive, you have to give your, and then you suddenly realise you've got an hour of nothing.
An hour?
Yeah.
Because premieres never start on time.
They never start on time.
Did you have a chit-chat with a fellow?
I had a few chit-chats, but you know, it was exhausting.
You know, you had to talk to other humans.
I know. But everyone had the same thought, exactly the same. I met everyone I spoke to. There was a couple of people I knew, and they were like, what are we doing? Why did we come here so early? You know, should have literally come here 5 minutes before it was due to start, and it would have been much better. But yeah, you're all sitting there wondering what to do without your fucking mobile phone.
See, well, this is a good exercise.
People should have all started taking out paperbacks and started reading books. It would have been amazing.
One person, one film prominent critic I know was literally reading a book. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I was bookless. So well, that
do you
was
not
that.
Remember like when the, like go back 10 years? They used to confiscate mobile phones at every single
screening.
Exactly,
but it's quite rare now.
It doesn't happen at all.
Yeah,
I think because no one will go to the screenings.
I wonder whether that... Do you know, it's interesting why they actually stopped doing that. I wonder if it's because they realised that no film had ever been pirated by film critics ever. So.
Exactly. But of course, now you've got influencers all over the place.
Yes, you do.
And someone told me that the influencers were allowed to keep their phones for much longer than everyone else.
Really?
Yes. Because obviously they...
You're an influencer. Why the hell do you have to give yours in?
You'd think, right?
You're influencing me every day.
Sadly, my influencerness was not recognised.
Boydie apparently could not influence the security guards.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, you need
to
work on that.
Indeed not. So yeah, everyone just didn't know what to do. There was just everyone wandering around going, what can I do with the next 45 minutes to an hour? And then they showed the episode. Then the whole cast was there, the Duffer Brothers was there, etc. So it was still exciting once it all got underway. But Ted Sarandos at the head, Big Cheese, made a speech.
Mm.
Yeah, that was interesting.
What did he say? This is good.
Lily Allen's ex-husband was not there though.
Fair enough.
Interestingly, not part of the entourage of the cast. What did you just ask? Sorry.
No, I just asked what he said, but you know,
Ted Sarandos.
I'll
tell you what he did say, which I don't think he kind of implied that there'll be more of the world of Stranger Things, even though it's obviously wrapping up.
Well, they've done a cartoon, haven't they?
Yeah, is that what you're talking
about? I have no doubt.
I got overly excited by that because I think the Duffer Brothers have done a deal with a rival streamer. But he said, there'll be more things set in this world. So that's something to hold on to if you're a Stranger Things fan. And my final, I still haven't finished.
Whoa.
The final, this is the, I've left the best to last.
Go on. Is it something we're going to be jealous
of? Burying the lead. No, it's not like that. I'm going to talk about the ending of episode 5 of The Chair Company, which has been around on Sky/Now for a while now. But if you haven't seen it yet and you're watching this series, then I am going to spoil what happens at the end of this episode. So maybe fast forward about 3 or 4 minutes. Sorry. It's just one of the most shocking TV moments of the year has occurred.
This is going to be something that I have no truck with, isn't it?
Probably. Mm. Well, you remember I mentioned The Chair Company?
Yeah.
I mentioned The Chair Company.
Yes.
So The Chair Company is ongoing at the moment on HBO in America and Sky Comedy here. This is the Tim Robinson show that I mentioned in the What We've Been Watching section when it first started. It all starts with him falling off, the chair collapsing under him when he's about to make a presentation, and he then is furious about it and then spends the most of his life now tracking down the people responsible for this dodgy chair, hence the title.
Feels like something I might do.
Anyway,
it really does.
Yeah, anyway. So you're busy watching the, you know, episode, I think we're up to episode 5, which went out kind of last week, 10 days ago. I didn't watch it live. I needed to catch up with a few episodes. So I caught up with it up to episode 6, I think, in the end. Episode 5, I'm trying to work out the best way of describing it, ends with a person kind of who plays Scrooge. The character is watching a thing on TV, and you think, oh, this is a version of A Christmas Carol with a character, with a guy playing Scrooge in it. And then what proceeds to happen is a woman approaches this person. He gets out his,
What?
And she does a thing to the thing. And so
I was not expecting this.
Yeah. Not only were you not expecting my description of it, no one in the world watching the show was expecting this moment to occur at the end of what is, you know, I mean, it's brilliant, by the way, this show. It's definitely going to be one of the shows of the year for aficionados of great comedy and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't, it's completely out of nowhere. As I say, it's one of the most shocking things. Now, it's spoiler chat, you know, people must, it's gone out, it's been there on Sky for probably like a week to 10 days now, this particular episode, but it is unbelievable, an unbelievable moment of shocking TV, which is even beyond the use of genitals, if you like, from The White Lotus. Remember, The White Lotus has been one of the most prominent, so to speak, you know, was he or wasn't he wearing a prosthetic, all of that, I mean.
It's quite cock heavy as a show.
Yeah. Mm. Whereas this has not been at all cock heavy until suddenly this moment occurs. And then it's literally like blink and you miss it at the end of the episode.
Oh,
and then
dear.
It cuts to the, yeah, right. And then it cuts to the titles and you're like, what just happened? And then and so I've been reading up on it, and I need to check, but the last time I looked, no one had made any comment about how they did it, what the extent to how they got away with it, where they had to check with HBO. There's an extra, when I think on Sky, when you play it, there's an extra kind of announcement at the beginning saying some viewers may find shocking, you know, there's a kind of apology in advance for it. But it is wild.
That's a new take on Charles Dickens.
Exactly. Indeed. But it is absolutely fucking insane. And honestly, it has to be seen to be believed. So, yeah, there's that. The Chair Company. Shock TV moment
of
the year.
What a tease for that show.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how we follow on from that.
That is what I've been watching.
I mean, who knows? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Should we have a listener question?
Let's do something to get away from that subject. Okay, we have a message from California Canary who says, question for the team. After watching the brilliant All Her Fault, couldn't help thinking Mr. Chips would have been a better title. I don't quite understand that. I'm not going to dwell on it in case it involves spoilers. He has put something in brackets. I'm not going to read it out. But the question he's asked is, have you ever thought a title wasn't good enough for a series and thought something better?
Yes, obviously. Nobody wants this, which is the worst title ever for anything.
James, correct.
Where Shiksa was a great title.
Mm. Yes, that's the answer.
That is the definitive answer.
Yeah, you can totally understand. The conversation that probably was, no one would know what that means. It's like, you could have explained it. Wouldn't have been difficult. Mm. But yeah, nobody wants this,
which no one can remember.
Right, and that was the problem. It took me about a year to remember what that's, because it's so generic and so bland. You're just like, I don't remember what that is called. You know, the one with the podcast and the terrible mic technique, that one.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's my answer too.
I mean, are they implying that All Her Fault isn't a great title? Or am I reading too much
you
into that?
You could kind of get away with that as a title because it's quite thematically poignant, isn't it? Because it is, you know, that's the whole point. They're all saying it's her fault, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you can get away with that.
Yeah. There's a lot of the something shows,
This is the other thing. It's not just about bad titles, it's about proximity, because All Her Fault came out, but isn't it the same week as All's Fair?
Oh, that's like, right.
That's deeply unfortunate because then you end up conflating both of those all the time, and you don't want to be confused with All's Fair.
Oh, by the way, my British and his obsession continues, and he was talking about All's Fair and how it's actually is actually fun, and he was kind of talking. He was basically saying what I said last week, which is that it's not as bad as everyone's saying, and it's aware of itself. It's aware of what it's doing. I just wanted to.
What I'm hearing is you and Brett on the same page. You're excited about that.
Yeah. But maybe All's Well is kind of, you can see whether All's Well in Love and War. That's the phrase. isn't it? That's where it's coming from. But it's just, it does.
So it's all fair.
All fair, sorry. All fair.
He's already forgotten what it's called.
Shows how forgettable it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially if you've got, yeah.
No. So
that's not a great title in itself. I guess All Her Fault is okay.
I mean, then there was that, you know, the spate of all the shows on Apple beginning with S.
Yes. I quite like that.
But some of them were forgettable. And I can't even remember some, you know.
Single word that... S's.
Yeah. Mm. Except for Shrinking, obviously. Amazing.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Of course, except for that one. Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think... It sounds like when they first announced it, the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the proximity of the two rings words
indeed
bothered me.
Oh.
I would have called that something. I'd have been like, no, repetition, that bothers me.
Yeah,
I'd have called
terrible.
It something different.
The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of the Lord.
That's the one. Yeah.
It's awful.
Or when you had that, do you remember Feud on Five? Fayard.
Yeah.
Fayard on
someone
Five.
Someone told me that, because I think it's on Netflix now, Fayard. Mm. And someone
it's
told
doing
me
really
that,
well, apparently.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. Someone told me that they've resolved the typographical issue, I think.
Oh, good.
And it looks okay now. It's no
probably
longer
after
failed.
Hearing you, Boyd.
Exactly, yeah. Sophie Petzl's show Blood is also on Netflix. Did we mention that?
It has moved to Netflix,
yeah. And it's also
right.
doing really well.
I
was in the top. Yeah, it was in the top 10 last time I looked, yeah.
Which channel was it on originally?
Five, I think. I think it was Five.
And it didn't have any issues, so it wasn't Blowed.
No, it wasn't Blowod, no. Blowod.
Blowod, yeah.
I'm trying to think of more examples of bad titles. But
I remember, do you remember that, the Kristen Ritter show, which was Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23?
Yeah.
Except they X'd out bitch. Mm. So when it was said, it was Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. Mm. But it only rhymes if you know not to say the word that is asterisked. But you would, because we're all adults.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's true. And also, I'm still genuinely unclear whether Emily in Paris is deliberately supposed to be Emily in Paris because it rhymes, or whether it's just Emily in Paris. I'm unclear on that.
It's just Emily in Paris, right?
Yeah. But it strikes me that if you were to call it Emily in Paris, that's quite twee, and that rhymes as well.
I think it's deliberate. Yeah, it does rhyme. Of course, she's in Rome in the next bloody series, so the whole thing, Emily in Rome.
Emily in Roma. It's not really the same, is it? Gets around as Emily.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of other terrible titles.
I think we've given some good answers.
Okay. Right. So Kay's got bored of this question.
It's
moving on,
up.
Are we? Is that what's happening?
It's live rumination.
Wow.
Yeah. It's difficult.
I think Episodes was a terrible name for a TV series.
I didn't mind Episodes.
No, but you've got the same problem here. It's like when you have a streaming service called Now. Like, it just makes talking about it unnecessarily difficult. It's on Now. No, it's not. It's on later. And then, it's Episodes. No, but what's the series called? Episodes. No, the series. Like, it all becomes very Abbott and Costello, and you just don't really need that. I also didn't love the whole, not to rag on Ryan Murphy any more than I already do, but American Horror Story, American Crime Story,
all of
those sort of things. I'm like, why?
Yeah, and talking of Ryan Murphy titles, if you go back to the Jeffrey Dahmer monster story, the actual title was Dahmer-Monster: The Jeffrey Dahmer Story. Two Dahmers in the same
title.
Yeah,
that's not good.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not good at all.
Plainly ridiculous.
iZombie was one I didn't like. I will say Money Heist is a terrible title, but of course that's not the real title, because the actual title is, Voidy?
Casa de Papel.
Which is a great title, and it's as much fun to say as it is to watch.
Yes, that's true.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah, I think there we do. There we do.
There we do.
We've answered the question.
Yeah, I'd be curious if anyone else has any terrible title TV shows they wish to share. Do send them into the postbag, pilottv@empiremagazine.com. We're in a rare, joyous moment here because Kay has just put a chocolate in her mouth, therefore is unable to speak. So I can really say absolutely anything at this point, and she has no right of reply. Boydie, what should we say? We're going to miss the opportunity. Hurry up. He's got nothing.
No, I've got nothing.
She's too late now. Look, she's gone.
See, because Boyd is kind.
No, he's not. He just couldn't think of anything.
I mean, it is sadly the latter, yeah.
Oh, Boyd!
I'm getting myself together for news, for the news section.
Okay, fine,
Boyd was composing himself. Shall we move on to news?
Yes.
There's quite a bit has actually happened this week.
Big news.
One big news involving a lift.
Yeah, the biggest news. This is something that if you've listened to this podcast regularly, you'd have thought.
I thought it was announced.
James thought this was announced months ago.
Maybe I just had the inside scoop.
Maybe not, maybe. But yeah, James thought months and months ago that it had officially been confirmed the Line of Duty was coming
Turns
back.
Turns out it hadn't.
But it hadn't at all. Hence, the huge big production of this announcement that was embargoed and it was coming out. And, you know, they had made a little video of them chatting about it in the lift, the three main characters, and they all joined in with their own version of the announcement, Vicky McClure, Martin Compston, and Agent Dunbar. And yeah, they confirmed the fact that a brand new season 7 of Line of Duty is in the works. They're going to start filming it In the spring in Belfast next year. So we'll have to wait, I'm afraid. But at least it's all written. Jed's written it all. That's what he's been doing. He's a busy man.
Wait.
And it is one of the most exciting, properly exciting announcements.
That's pretty exciting.
So yeah. Imagine the scene, right? I'm hosting a live Q&A for Red Eye Series 2.
Yeah.
Okay?
Which stars?
Martin Compson, right? So I'm doing this at 5 o'clock with the writer, Peter A. Dowling, who, by the way, listens to the podcast. So hello.
Hi, Peter.
And the rest of the brilliant cast. Anyway, we're talking about it. I get off the call at 5:40 because it was a Zoom interview, and then check my emails, and it's been announced midway through, and I've got Martin online. I mean, obviously, I couldn't have brought it up because it's, you know, I'm there to promote an ITV show. What to say?
ITV won't have minded.
I think they would have
understood.
Done. Yes.
In fact, ITV Studios are one of the producers of it. So, you know, I mean, there's no connection between ITV. Well, I mean, they're owned by the same company, but
so there's some connection.
ITV One, the press offices might have been askance if you'd mentioned it, shall we say.
Exactly. But it was quite thrilling to be on a call with him while it was. Didn't get any kind of signs from him that this big bombshell
was going to
be
dropped.
It
must have been weird for him, because obviously it was dropped at 4 o'clock, right?
I think it came. Well, we
it
got
was definitely
the,
4 o'clock.
Okay, we got the. Well, I received the email at 5:20, so I was like, oh, God, that's really close. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's properly. You know, that's one of the most exciting announcements of the year.
I mean, look, it was one of, but arguably not the biggest announcement this week.
Oh, here we go.
Because the biggest announcement is that Stargate is coming back to our screens with an all-new series that will crucially not be a reboot, but a continuation of the Stargate mythology. For those of you who are not au fait with Stargate, looking at you, Kay, obviously this is based on the Roland Emmerich movie, but there was Stargate SG-1, which was a series that played in the 90s and ran for, I want to say, something like 10 years, and I watched every single episode of it. It's had two spin-offs in live action. It had Stargate Atlantis, which was good. It had Jason Momoa in it. It's the first time people saw Jason Momoa. And Stargate Universe with Robert Carlyle, which was really good, but I think only ran for one season, so that was disappointing. There was also an animated show as well. But
do you know how? Wait, can I?
Because I'm speaking really quickly. Yeah.
This is how I know he's excited, because he's sped up.
I'm speeding up.
I can barely understand what he's saying.
I genuinely I have
slow
a real
down.
A yeah. real affection.
Check
for.
Check your pulse.
I do have
it's
a real affection.
Stargate.
I love it. Yeah. So I'm very excited that
anyway,
Stargate
back to London
is coming. Yes. Unbelievable.
Well, actually, some other exciting news from BBC as well.
Does it involve Stargate?
I was going to talk about the storyline of Line of Duty, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Because you know,
how do you know the storyline?
Yes, this is the thing. I can't believe this is the most interesting
was
thing.
Was it in the press release?
Yes.
Oh, see, I didn't see the press release.
Well, right,
I just saw the little video.
You don't read on. No, of course. Unless it's Stargate One.
Yeah, what about Stargate?
Every other press release is top line.
Apologia, Boyd Carroll. This is
the main point. And people, as you mentioned before, people, when we talk about news stories, we often don't talk about them in any depth. We just kind of like gloss over and move on, like we're about to do. But one of the most interesting things about the announcement was what's happening with the characters. In Series 7, AC-12 has been disbanded and rebranded the Inspectorate of Police Standards.
No.
Anti-corruption work has never been more difficult. And in this challenging climate, Arnott, Fleming and Hastings are assigned their most sensitive case so far. Detective Inspector Dominic Goff, a charismatic officer winning plaudits for a string of takedowns of organised crime, is accused of abusing his position of trust to act as a sexual predator. Dealing with sexual predators. Mm. And Goff's case is a deliberate distraction from a bigger threat still operating in the shadows.
Nice and
it's
topical.
Jed, as ever, tapping into what's going on in the world right now. And this will be, I guarantee you, a no-holds-barred look at this whole issue and of what goes on with senior police officers, etc. So adding to the excitement is that storyline. I think it's really interesting. Really interesting story.
All I needed from that announcement was that one piano key being pressed over and over again. And that's all I need. That does it for me.
Yeah. So, it's fantastically thrilling news. And the other one more thing I want to say about it is, because the press release emphasised how many people watched the finale of season 6, 17 million people, making it like the biggest drama since like records began. And I think potentially even more people will watch the new season. And I imagine it will either go out like beginning of autumn or may even wait until the New Year's Day thing they're doing this year.
How many years between the series?
Off the top of my head,
it's
5 years,
wasn't it?
So it'd be 5 years. Yeah. Lasted in 2021. So it'll be at least 5 years whenever it comes out next year. But it's the final thing I want to say about it is that it is yet further proof that this whole idea that linear old-fashioned TV channels are over and no one's bothered about the communal experience of watching stuff live anymore is bullshit. Because when something comes along that people are excited about, this will be massive. I tell you, it will be absolutely gigantic. It'll be Gavin and Stacey levels of people watching it, and so there's so many examples now of people of shows that do manage to capture that kind of thing. The Traitors recently, for example. There's no point in banging on about it, because every now and then there are enough of these things to disprove that whole theory. That's my final comment on this.
Are you sure it's your final comment?
Yes,
on it?
For now.
Okay, so I'm just going to...
Anyway, back to Stargate.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right, so Stargate SG-1. No, I'm kidding.
I want to tell you the exciting news that Riot Women is getting an encore. So another BBC big announcement, which is that Sally Wainwright's hit BBC drama is coming back for a second series, which is brilliant news. Now, I still need to catch up, so I'm still stuck on series 3. I've been very busy recently, but also because I know something big...
Have you, though?
Big in... Yes, Boyd, I have been very busy. Something big is happening in episode 4, I know. It's been... Like, everyone's been talking about it, so I've kind of been dragging my heels.
You still not watched that episode 4?
No.
Oh, God.
It's because of what you said.
Oh, well, you put you off. Well, I mean, it would put him off. Yeah.
I know it's a hard episode, but yeah, I can't wait to finish it. And then, yeah, exciting news for it to come back.
The Ricky Gervais Netflix special of his most recent stand-up show has been confirmed for the December 30th release, Kay.
Is this Mortality?
Mortality. Mm. We went to one of the earliest versions of this, when he did
it. You took me as a present.
Yeah, I did take you as a present. That's just how great I am.
Didn't take me.
So this is his huge big show that he's been doing for the last year or so. He's been touring on it since 2024, 2025. The show they're picking out to show is filmed at the London Palladium.
It wasn't our one.
No, it wasn't our one, no. Our one was still a work in progress. We saw very early stages. I think it would have changed quite a lot.
Yeah. Were you just about to say that London Palladium's your stomping ground?
Yeah, my stomping ground, yeah. Exactly.
Because of the Gavin and Stacey tour.
Indeed.
Fine.
That's what many things Ricky and I have in common. We both performed at the London Palladium.
That is true.
God. Talking of monsters.
Yeah. But the log line is Gervais takes on his own mortality in a brutally honest and darkly funny stand-up special about his life, death and state of the world. So that's exciting. Full-on Gervais treat for New Year, Kay.
We didn't discuss this last week because it broke just after we'd recorded, but Rian Johnson's Poker Face with Natasha Lyonne has been cancelled after 2 seasons.
I'm not shocked by that. I think
you liked it more than I did, both of you.
I really liked it, yeah.
I think it's good. It's not for me because, I don't like those kind of episodic series.
But you made an exception for this.
Oh, I mean, I made an exception in that I watched the first episode and said it was quite good, but I did not make the exception in that I watched any more of it ever planned to.
Watched quite a few of it and I really enjoyed it, but I think it must... We'll keep watching it and thinking this must be exhausting for Rian Johnson, because every episode he has to come up with an ingenious whodunit of knives out levels of complexity often. And it must be just... almost impossible to pull it off.
For those of you upset that you're not going to eat more of this, bear in mind that, speaking of Knives Out, there is a new one imminent.
There is, yeah.
So, Wake Up Dead Man. It arrives, I think it's in cinemas on the 26th of November, and then it comes to Netflix on the 12th of December. I have seen it.
So have I.
But it's embargoed. So we cannot say what we think about
it. I saw it with a Q&A with the whole cast.
Did you?
No. Yeah. Including Danielle Craig. I don't know why I call him Danielle.
It's funny, I went to the Royal Opening, which wasn't the King wasn't there. I was there, so I'm going to call it the Royal Opening of the London Film Festival.
Which
of course was the premiere. And I was there with the cast. That was nice.
You were the cast?
Yeah, I went to the after party with them afterwards. It was good, yeah.
Did you collar Danielle Craig and ask him about what he thought of Stargate SG-1?
I did, actually. It's funny. He was a big driving force in getting it greenlit, actually. But you didn't know that.
The thought of it.
He's a big gator.
My God. Is that what they're called?
You'd never say that to his face.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, do we have any more news or are we wrapping up? Okay, we're done with news. Let's move on to...
No, that was
this...
a funny... I want to hear a funny news story.
Boyd is literally... He's like the... The can is open, the worms are everywhere.
Well, this is a very both of you really, but particularly you.
Oh, okay,
James.
Carry on.
Did you see this? I think this was just announced today yesterday. Friends spin-off Joey.
Yes.
Did you read the story?
No.
Friends spin-off Joey finally releases its final 8 unaired episodes nearly 20 years later.
Wow. Yeah, did they never air anywhere?
They never
Not even in the US?
No, they didn't air anywhere.
I'm not sure if this is a good idea.
Well, I mean, it's funny because it was such a disaster, Joey. I remember in the very early, it was like Channel 5 bought it and it was the whole big, adult, big dramatic launch of it. And it was like a massive flop. No one liked it. It was pretty terrible. So it completely flopped and they didn't show the final 8 episodes on it. But yeah, they're going to put them all on the official Friends YouTube channel. Along with 38 other episodes that comprise. There were 38 episodes there.
38 yeah. episodes. And they aired 30 of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And then just randomly didn't put up the last 8.
So, you know, for Friends diehard completists, shall we
say. They might as well get some money from the advertising on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. And absolutely massive Matt LeBlanc fans. Then, yeah, tune in to their YouTube channel and you'll see it. So that was that's a funny story, isn't it?
That's not a bad story to end you. Thank you, Boydie.
Pleasure.
Let's move on to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have Prisoner 951 on BBC One, which dramatises the true story of Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe, here played by Nargis Rashidi. And she's a British citizen, as you will know from the news headlines, who was detained by the Iranian regime while she was in Tehran, visiting her parents and her brother. Joseph Fiennes here plays her husband, Richard, who campaigned tirelessly for her release. Now, crucially, this is the dramatisation of this story and not, in fact, the similarly named documentary on this subject. Isn't that right, Kay?
Yes, that is right. Yeah. Okay, so the reason why he's bringing that up is because I kept on getting it wrong and I kept on thinking we were doing the documentary and I thought it was odd that we were doing a documentary because we never do. And then Boyd had to point out, no, there's a drama. Don't watch the wrong thing, you bloody idiot. So, yeah, anyway, I didn't. I watched the right one and I'm glad I did because it's incredibly powerful. I mean, I think, as you say, most people will know about Nazanin and what she's gone through. But to see it play out, it's just devastating to realise, you know, how she was treated, how it all panned out, and the fact that, not least because she was separated from her her baby, who's only 22 months old and was still breastfeeding and everything. So it was very traumatic for her to be separated from Gabriella. And yeah, it's so shocking to see how it all happened, and the fact that Richard was in the UK, didn't know what was going on. The family also were being kept in the dark and couldn't say too much as well because they were worried about they were being spied on. I just think this is an extraordinary watch. It's a very powerful watch. I think it's an important one. And also, you know, the fact that it's not just Nazanin this has happened to, it's many other people, which they also mention in this, and the fact that the Foreign Office were very slow to act and were just, you know, they were all trying to calm the family down. They didn't want Richard to publicise it as he did because they said it was jeopardising her. But actually, it's because behind the scenes, later it came to light, it was all linked to a debt that the UK had with Iran. I believe $393.8 million.
Yeah, so just a small loan then.
A small loan. Mm. I mean,
something to do with tanks,
cover it,
wasn't it?
Yeah, something to do with tanks that weren't delivered in the 70s. And overall, I would just say they've done a great job. It's so immersive. You absolutely feel like you're there with her, and you run the gamut of emotions that she goes through, from being like shocked, confused. She doesn't know what she's been detained for, and she thinks it's just a simple mistake because they say, you know, she's going to be released the next day, so she's hopeful. And then as the days turn into months, turn into years, obviously the full horrifying reality dawns upon her, and it's completely devastating. But yeah, I thought it was really well done, and enjoyable seems like the wrong word to use.
It's definitely not enjoyable.
It's not enjoyable, but I think it's worth everyone's time.
As I think Boydie has already guessed, I found this exceptionally difficult to watch because it's really, really stressful. Although I will say only the second most upsetting show I watched this week. But Boydie, what did you think of it?
I thought it was excellent. And I think we've reviewed a lot of shows, in recent times, which are like true crime type shows. This isn't really, it's not true crime.
I mean, it kind of is. It's just an international crime, a political crime.
Certainly what the Iranians were doing was criminal, that's for sure. Yeah. But where the tone is like a bit askew and they try and be a bit clever and they try and employ gimmicks, you know, to kind of dramatise the story, and it all becomes a bit queasy. And where I think this is brilliantly judged all the way through, I think, you know, and there are moments where, you know, you see an insight to her mind. She's dreaming of her husband, for example, when she's put in this tiny cell on her own.
It feels very real because to get her through this.
Yeah, of course, exactly. So even those moments which are almost little flights of fantasy, if you like, or whatever, are very well judged and very well handled. And it is like you're experiencing this whole nightmare. I mean, the word Kafkaesque is overused. This is the ultimate Kafkaesque, relentless nightmare where she doesn't know what's happening to her. She's just was arriving to have a holiday, to see her family. She keeps being lied to by the people who are kind of interrogating her.
She's being accused of being a spy, right?
But even then, they don't really tell her that for ages and ages. Mm-hmm. You know, and she can't. She's blindfolded everywhere she goes, so she can't see where they're taking her. They keep dropping hints that she might be set free. You know, 5 days in next week, in the week after, and it's all just playing tricks on her. It's a form of torture, basically. Mm-hmm. They induce various forms of torture on her. And it's just incredibly powerful. And I think, and even though it isn't enjoyable, I'm telling you, it's so well done and it's so gripping. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, she is phenomenal. Narges Rashidi, she's completely believable 100% of the time. I mean, so is Joseph Fiennes, but I think his role is, you know, not as hard. What she's doing is really difficult, right? She's kind of playing someone terrified all the way through. And even there's a scene in the first episode where she gets to see the baby again, tantalizingly, again, cruelly, really, mm-hmm. but for kind of minutes. And when she's playing with the kids, she's so natural. It's almost like it's like watching a documentary.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Ironically, yeah, it's not. We watch the documentary separate the following week. So there is actually a documentary on BBC Two about the whole case. But I just thought the acting was brilliant. I think the way it's written, Stephen Burchard wrote it, who wrote The City Is Ours. He's, mm-hmm. you know, a very experienced drama.
Did you say this, James? It's based on her book.
It's a forthcoming book. It hasn't come out yet.
Has it not come out yet?
The book's written by the two of them.
It's
called A Yard of Sky. It's coming out soon, apparently, yeah. But it is based on that. You're right, yes. And directed by Philippa Lothar. We directed episodes of The Crown. She's brilliant. She does a brilliant job as well. So it's one of those things that reminded me a bit of like some of the films about the World Trade Center, 9/11, was it United 93?
Mm-hmm. Paul Greengrass films,
right? It's got Paul Greengrass quality to it, actually. In fact, that's
shaky camera.
But and even though it isn't, you know, even though it's telling an incredibly depressing, distressing story, it is really gripping. Mm-hmm. And like the way he makes all United 93. I remember watching it like two or three times, weirdly, because it was so intensely gripping and fascinating. I kind of wanted to see how it. And it's the other kind of thing that I think is incredible about this type of show is what an undertaking. They have to dramatize this really complex situation. They have to find, first of all, a location where to stand in for the prison where she was kept. They have to find locations like the airport in Iran. And it's a really ambitious, big thing because I think if you drop the ball in this thing and you try and do it cheaply, on the cheap, or you don't, you know, put in incredible levels of time and effort to getting it all right, it will come across as inauthentic. Whereas this is so authentic, every single step of the way. I just think it's a real achievement. So I think everyone, the parents, yeah. And the whole thing with the Foreign Office, I thought was really, because yeah, the Foreign Office is dragging, wanting. Everyone knows the British Foreign Office almost more than any other is all about, oh no, we can't ruffle feathers. It won't work. But he actually, the more feathers he ruffles, and the more, you know, the more that the her supporters do stuff, whether it's from hunger strikes and all of the stuff they
petitions.
Try to do.
Petitions. So within the first morning of him, the husband putting an online petition, 15,000 people signed. Yeah. And that really scared the
That real kind of conflict, if you like, between the actual family who are trying to do that and within the families, because mm-hmm. her dad and mm-hmm. her brother have conflict about what the best
thing to do. Because they're living in Iran and they're obviously in peril themselves.
Exactly. And then the conflict between the Foreign Office and him, the husband.
The first meeting between the husband and the minister extraordinary.
It is really extraordinary. So and stuff like that is really dramatic. I guess what I'm trying to say is, don't be put off by the fact that this is a distressing story, because it is very dramatic and it's very interesting as well. And the way it's done will grip you all the way through.
It's interesting, I think, because this gives you an amount of nuance, because it's recent enough that we all kind of know the facts of this case to greater or lesser extent.
Sure.
It's only four episodes, so it's 4 hours. Mm. In total.
I think that's merciful.
And also necessary, I think, because again, you've got this element, because there's not a lot of, you know, overarching drama, for the simple reason that we all know how this ends. And we know the beats of how it plays out. We may not know the minutiae and, you know, some of the discussions that were had. And that's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, that detail is really dramatic.
But we do know how it ends.
Yeah, sure.
And we know where it's going. So I think the early episodes where she's discombobulated, well, not early episodes, I mean, sort of almost the early scenes in the first episode, where she doesn't know what's happening. Oh, I'm going to be released on Sunday. Oh, it's all going to be fine. Obviously, we're all watching this. We know it's not going to be fine. And we know she's not going to be released on Sunday. So I almost think that if you had gone into this cold and you knew nothing about the actual situation, like, that would have been incredible edge of your seat stuff, because you're not, oh my God, what is going to happen? Except there will be another three episodes, so you know it's not going to get resolved that quickly.
This is why I think it's so good, because again, I'm making the comparison to United 93 again. Obviously, we all know
how that is. It's the detail that makes it dramatic.
It's about
the human drama.
It's like Lockerbie,
isn't it?
when we watched it.
But particularly this one, seeing it through her eyes and literally being shown what she was put through hour on hour, day by day, that makes it really dramatic and interesting. Even though you think you know the story, but actually this is showing you in its detail something that you don't know. I don't think any of us do know this. Well, her and her family and close people close to her, but I don't think the rest of us know the detail of it, and that's what makes it special.
And it's chilling because it's still happening. That's the thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely, painfully so. Well, I'm going to make a political point.
Oh, here we go.
I warn you now. But I genuinely think it won't be long before we see a similar drama about the people that are being taken off the streets by ICE people in Trump's America. And you can cut that if you want, James, but I think it's a valid comparison, because people are being snatched off the street and without any due process in the United States of America right now. So, and I think that deserves to be dramatized in a similar way.
What would you just call it? ICE?
Yes. Yes.
Fine.
There we go. Boyd is pitching TV shows to the BBC. So if you would like to make that show, please make the check out to Pilot TV Podcast.
Keep us in Lindt chocolates.
And we'll split it between us. Or just send in Lindt vouchers. Yep. That's fine too.
Yeah, that will also work.
We will accept that.
Yeah, I mean, inappropriate, but...
Fair enough. Prisoner 951 then airs on BBC One.
Yes, so it started yesterday, Sunday the 23rd. Cameras on today, Monday the 24th. And then next Sunday and Monday, as we've said, it'll all be on the iPlayer as well.
Next up this week, we have Watson on Sky Witness. Season one of Watson, we should say, aired back in January on CBS in the US. And I think the second season started last month over there as well. So we are quite a way behind. But this show, which we already talked about a little bit last week, this stars Morris Chestnut as Dr. John Watson, Sherlock Holmes' famous sidekick, who kind of after Sherlock is apparently killed by Moriarty at Reichenbach Falls, retires from the whole investigation game, sets up a hospital in Pittsburgh where he essentially becomes House MD. The setup for this show is wild. Boydie.
Yes.
Now, I famously didn't watch all of House.
No.
But this is basically a House reboot.
Oh.
But with...
Wash your mouth
it
out.
It is.
No, it is. Yeah,
it's not as good as House, so you can't compare it.
But it is Dire House. But also, like, this is what's wild to me. This is basically the setup, the fact that he has a load of kind of like student-type underling doctors, and he has those little sort of Socratic discussions. Is it lupus? You know, like, a lot of that goes on. But also, so you've got that on the one hand, and then randomly, they use this incredible, incredibly cynical musical leitmotif from the BBC Sherlock to remind you that it's Sherlock connected, even though it's not that Sherlock connected. And I thought that was so fucking cheeky.
Yeah, insane. Absolutely insane. It opens quite spectacularly with the Reichenbach Falls kind of incident. So there's a big waterfall.
Yep.
It's all you think, oh, this is quite a lavish, you know, Sherlockian thing.
And then you go, hospital procedural.
And then it does do an incredible, kind of incredibly unthrilling... becomes an unthrilling procedure, as you say, in the House style.
But so close to the House style.
But I tell you the difference, though,
is
the tone. So House, right from the start, the genius of House, and I've watched every single episode, some of them multiple times, it's fun. Because you've got Hugh Laurie showing off as Dr. House, being smug and cantankerous, but genius.
Mm-hmm.
You've got him bouncing off his own Wilson, right? The Dr. Watson character, who's a lovely guy, decent guy, and they're constantly bickering about stuff. He's bickering with the rest of his team. The mysteries are really interesting. You know,
they're smart.
There is a mystery every week. There's running jokes about lupus. You know, it's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny and clever and gripping and dramatic when he wants to be dramatic, blah, blah, blah. This is like, has very, no sense of humour about it. Like, every now and then there's characters who are twins in it, and one of them starts dating the other's ex-girlfriend. And that's a funny little moment. Well, I'm trying to be generous.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the humour in what is otherwise a weirdly dour take on Sherlock and on House. Again, but Sherlock itself, you know, the coming back to the show, it's fucking hilarious. It's, you know, Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss bringing the comedy to that character and that story. This is there's a miserable case it starts with this
with a woman.
With the young mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of depressing rather than kind of fascinating, and the whole tone of it is quite self-serious as well, as if, like, you know, apart from randomly this British character.
Please do not.
Yes, Shinwell, who's a former criminal from London, who's acquainted with Holmes and Watson, who kind of like rescues him from this, from the Reichenbach thing, and kind of tells him what's going on, and he's like a real Cockney.
He's a Cockney.
He's from a Guy Ritchie show.
Home, Gov.
Yeah, he's wandered in from the Gentleman, the Guy Ritchie series, and there's just a real weird clash of, like, it's just, I think it's just his accent is so Cockney in this, and it might be his actual accent. I think it probably is. He's, you know, he's a British guy. Richie Costa plays him, but it just feels all askew. It doesn't hold together, and it's trying to be like House, but failing miserably, mixed with Sherlock, and failing even more miserably. It does signal the death knell of mainstream network primetime TV.
So network. Yeah. Like, it's almost excruciating.
Well, that's
network.
The problem. I watched it thinking, you haven't learned. You've taken such clear inspiration from these brilliant shows that went before it, that told the Sherlock Holmes story and the Watson story as well. But you've learned nothing, because what you've made is just this boring, dour, unfunny, miserable
thing. There's obviously an audience for it. That's the thing.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, it shows you how incredibly common adaptations of Holmes and Watson stories are. I mean, Arthur Conan Doyle, I think it's Arthur C. Clarke. Arthur Conan Doyle.
That's a Sherlock I'd watch.
Yeah. I think it's out of, what's the word? There's no restrictions. Anyone can do their Sherlock.
Because it's out of copyright.
Out of copyright, that's the word I was looking for. Copyright. So, you know, these keep happening again and again and again.
But the music.
Yes.
The music thing. So I can't remember what that warbling instrument is that they used, you know, because it has a very distinctive sound, hasn't it? Like the BBC Sherlock.
Yeah.
And at two points in this episode, they all but lift. And it's one of those things where, oh my God, it's literally the music, except they changed like one note. So it's slightly different.
I wanted to text David Arnold. I kind of know who wrote the theme. Yeah. Co-wrote the theme.
Do you know they've ripped off your music?
Yeah, absolutely. Because you're right. It's comical.
Yeah. But it's so like, hey, look, you love Sherlock. This is Sherlock. Yeah.
And the other one final thing, sorry. I mean, spoiler alert, but I mean, you know, who cares? no. All right, so Moriarty pops up.
He does.
At the end, and I'm like, oh, this is, I mean...
That was the final nail in the coffin.
I mean, you're following the footsteps of Andrew Scott, one of the most powerful and impactful and legendary arrivals of a character in TV history.
Did you miss him?
He is so brilliant, right, as Moriarty in the BBC Sherlock. This arrival of the Sherlock could not be less underwhelming.
Don't you come for Randall Park.
Oh, my God. I'm talking about miscasting. Randall Park is he's the least threatening, scary.
But I love Randall Park.
He might cuddle him to death.
I mean, right, it almost does.
You'll never see him coming.
It's embarrassing. So that's all I'm going to say. You've managed to find someone whose version of Moriarty is literally could be any, like the bloke next door. He's so unscary.
Hiding in plain sight.
Yes, well.
I think you've been a touch harsh. I agree with everything you've said broadly.
Except for you randomly like Randall Park.
Apart from I like Randall Park. Yeah. But also, it's not a bad show. It's not a great show.
It's not great.
It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine.
I agree.
Like the medical mystery is quite interesting. They go through a few like red herrings, not actual red herrings, but you know, oh, is it gonna be this? Oh, no, it's not lupus, it's gonna be that. And the actual, you know, when they finally, I must admit, I found the final payoff of what it was quite like, all right, I don't know what any of that means, but sure, whatever you like. But you know, there's a bit of revelation about it, you know, ooh, interesting. So, I didn't mind that, it wasn't as clever as the few episodes of House that I have seen, but I think you're right. It's while I think Maurice Chestnut is perfectly fine and charismatic and all these things, and there is a gratuitous shot where the Doctor takes off his shirt so you can see the unbelievably chiselled abs and pecs that he has. It's like, okay, that is a Doctor with enough time to go to the gym four times a day. But yeah, all of that is fine, but it's just like, it's not enough. It's not quite enough. So it's perfectly fine. And I think if you love House and you rewatch House all the time and you're like, oh God, I wish they made more House. I mean, you might as well watch it, because if you like that formula, it is similar. It's just not as good.
I think all of House is on Netflix is now handily.
Or just rewatch House on Netflix.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, no, I agree. My slightly more, it sounded more damning than I meant it to be. It is fine. And in fact, it's not as bad as some of the other, we've done a couple of big network primetime shows recently, which have been worse.
Yes.
This is, so yeah. This is
and
not
it the, has the slightly, perhaps ill-conceived conceived like villainous Moriarty thread running through the episodes in the background. Like, that's your story arc for you there.
Yeah, indeed.
But it's absolutely wild, though, that if they wanted to do a House-esque kind of investigative medical procedural, why they decided to sort of like blend it with the Sherlock franchise kind of blows my mind. Like, it's such an odd fit.
Because we had Elementary as well, by the way, which is also CBS. It's the CBS
Johnny show. Lee Miller.
And that ran for years. So I guess that's, you know, I guess that's why. And I've kind of thought, I wonder whether this was in the same universe, but I don't think it is, because they had a completely different Moriarty.
And also, I believe Sherlock, there's been an announcement of the casting of Sherlock in this show.
Oh, right, yes. I thought you were going to say Sherlock's coming back. I thought this was another Line of Duty.
Yes, that's it. They've announced it. Yes. Benedict Cumberbatch will return as Sherlock in Watson. It was unexpected, but it's happening.
Wow, can you imagine?
I have absolutely nothing to add to your analysis, other than to say, when I was watching this, my only overriding thought was, I really want to watch House. I'm going to do that. Yeah. Rather than
what you're saying is, if you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be this show.
Well done. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Watson then, is on.
It's on Sky Witness.
Yeah.
And now on Monday, the 24th of November, today, if you're listening to this as the podcast comes out, 9 p.m. 2025. Nearly at 2026, by the way. That's exciting.
Bring it on.
Finally, this week, we have series 3 of Changing Ends on ITV. I did say it was a slow week. This continues the story of a young Alan Carr who, apparently, after Celebrity Traitors, is beloved by all, and I'm not allowed to say a bad word about him. This series is not beloved by me. It has to be said. I strongly suspect the two of you feel differently. I turned this off after 12 minutes and 44 seconds because I just couldn't handle it.
Oh my God.
I did, however, give myself a day to recover and then watch the remaining 15 minutes of it, but it was a struggle.
I think that's banana crackers. That is crazy. What? You could sit through Watson.
Yes.
He's a monster.
Watson, I found this excruciating.
Oh my God.
I really did.
Why?
I think it's just like, it's definitely not my sense of humour. I find it quite aggressively unfunny to the point of cringe, where it triggers my cringe reflex. I'm like, oh my God, I just can't watch this. It's just not my sense of humour at all. And so I find it a bit of a struggle to watch.
Okay.
Sorry.
I think that does.
So I know a number of people, including Lizzie in the Empire Office, who's a massive fan of the show, really, really enjoys it. So I'm prepared
to concede
that it may be me.
Oh, it's definitely you. I mean, there's no.
Really?
Of course.
You sure?
Absolutely. 100%. I love it. It's great. I'm surprised you could take against it. It doesn't strike me as the kind of show that many people, you might not love it as much as, you know, I love Alan. I think he's fantastic.
I find the Alan Carr impersonation quite grating.
Oh, okay.
The comedy is very broad. And weirdly, the Alan character, I actually found less like the cringe stuff, a lot of it came from the parental storylines, which I did not enjoy either, because again, very broad, and I was just like, to my let's say finally miscalibrated sense of humor, it was just like bum note after bum note. I'm just like, oh my God, this is just killing me. I find it so unfunny, so I just I couldn't.
I mean, I think part of the whole joy of the show is the fact that they found someone, Oliver Savelle particularly, to play the young Alan who has.
And but this wasn't the old young Alan, was it?
Yeah.
So he's just got older.
Fine, because
that's the aging process.
Yes. Thank you for explaining the passage of time. I just wanted to be sure.
You thought it might be a new actor.
Yeah, I thought it was a new actor because he's older. It's the same actor.
It's
right,
the same actor. Yeah. And I have to say, part of the whole success of the show is that he is brilliant, actually,
agreed,
at doing the young Alan. Because it's a hard task, because Alan has got
a very distinctive, unique
voice, a unique delivery of what he says, which is partly why he's a national treasure, and partly why he won the Celebrity Traitor. Spoiler alert, if you haven't. I mean, forget
oh my
about
God.
That. I mean, I wouldn't put it past people.
Boyd, he just spoiled Celebrity Traitors.
Yeah. So yeah, look, he does a brilliant job playing him, and obviously that is Alan speaks in this particular way that clearly you find grating.
No, weirdly, it's not his voice I find grating. It's the imitation of his voice. It's just I don't know. It just I can't be dealing with it.
Okay, yeah,
it's a lot.
I just think he's brilliantly cast and it does a fantastic job in the role. And in this new series set in 1989, it's got the 80s nostalgia thing. It
Athena,
right?
What a throwback.
Because you're suddenly reminded of...
And those exact posters.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. I like the Athena bit. Oh, I did like that.
How can you not...
I like the Athena stuff.
Because the best... This show has the best kind of nostalgia because it reminds you of stuff you'd forgotten about. Mm-hmm. Or the minutiae. And I think that's down to Alan. Alan's very clever at remembering stuff and pinpointing stuff that has that, I'm going to say, Proustian, no less. Yes, indeed. Quality.
Wow.
Yes.
Proustian.
I'm sticking with it. just these little things that remind you of your youth of times gone past.
Even just like, you know, the swimming classes and stuff like that. And
all the detail is actually great. But particularly Athena, just I thought that brought it back. And to recreate that, where the fuck they found
the posters.
Just front of the store. Finding the posters is less difficult, but just the whole storefront. Athena doesn't exist anymore, as far as I'm aware.
It hasn't existed for decades.
But I remember going into the, because they'd have books, they'd have the
posters. Mainly posters and cards and things.
Did they sell books? I don't know. I guarantee you, a lot, maybe the bigger branches.
Okay.
The one I went in.
The flagship Athena store,
books,
fine.
Right?
It's a weird detail for you to get caught up on.
It is a really useless detail. But it's just great to see those things, particularly that example. And of course, the other element of why it works for me is because it's a lot of the adult stuff is about football, because his dad is
another reason it has to be said that I did not enjoy it.
Indeed.
But Sean Dooley as his dad.
Sean Dooley does a brilliant job. I love Sean Dooley. Sean Dooley is great in everything he does. He was in It's a Sin, etc. He's always brilliant. But he does such a good job playing the manager, because he just captures what football managers were like back then, and some of them still are like that today, kind of unreconstructed. But he's a decent guy. He's not caricatured, I think, interestingly, because an eyebrow has been raised by James listeners, but he's not caricatured. I think particularly the dad, because you might think the dad is like a disapproving, you know, and he has elements of that, and he is embarrassed quite a lot by Alan, which I think rings totally true. But at the end of the day, he's a good guy. He's a decent guy, and in his dealings in the football world, you see that come out as well. Being fascinated by football, to have that recreation of what football was like back then. And we're talking lower division football. This is not like Premier League or Division 1. Yeah, or Division 1, as we used to call it. This is kind of lower level of in the football pyramid. So it's all of that I found interesting. Alan popping up every now and then, that's that device, I think, works really well.
Do you know what? I used to hate that first. When we watched the
I
first
remember
time
you
out,
mentioning that.
I was like, I didn't need that.
I always liked that
fourth wall being broken. I mean, like, Fleabag obviously did it very well, but even in, do you remember the show about the phone hacking recently with David Tennant talking to him? I just do not like it. But I have to say, and I can't tell if my enjoyment of this has increased because of the Celebrity Traitors and like just everyone, and everyone appreciating Alan more. But I really enjoyed those cameos now. I thought they added extra dimension.
But it's a bit like things that Everybody Hates Chris. Remember the show? You know,
the Chris Rock one.
Yeah, where Chris Rock narrated it and kind of. So it has that. There's another example, which I can't remember at the moment, right now, obviously, of a show about a kid, the life of a young celebrity, like, and where the older version pops up as well. So it is a device that's been used before. I think it works really well. I've always liked.
Wasn't it the Rock one?
That's right. You're right. The Rock. Yeah.
Young Rock.
Yes. Exactly. Thank you. So I've always loved the Alan popping up elements to it. I think actually they've got better as it's got on.
I agree with that, pithier. Actually. Yeah. I didn't, because I seem to require I didn't love those in the first season, but actually here, I actually thought they were quite funny.
Yeah, yeah. He's just got funny bones. I've said it before. Yes. Some people do, some people don't. And I think with the casting, and I think the story, by the way, the storyline in the first episode is that young Alan gets a crush on the handsome boy who works in Athena. And that's a lot, you know, it's not long ago, I don't know, maybe even 10, 15, you'd never have got this storyline. You know, a young guy, you know, kind of teenies, I think he's like 15, talking about his, you know, how he fancies this other boy. It's we've moved on.
Yes.
And I think this is testament to that culturally. I think it's significant.
To be celebrated.
Yeah, totally to celebrate. And they do it very, and actually, again, to fly in the face of what James says, they do that quite very cleverly and kind of tenderly. Is tenderly a word?
No, I was going to say, it's very sweet and funny and tender in places, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. And tone is everything in this kind of show. So I think you're horrendously wrong.
Fair
it.
Enough.
You should repent.
I think it does lack a certain verisimilitude, but it is a sitcom, so, you know, that's fine. But just certainly the interaction, Paul, there is an incident in the pool with a chocolate bar, which very nearly, like, I was like, no, just absolutely not. I can't be having this. But I should say, I have nothing against Alan Carr at all. He may be a national treasure to you. He's not so much for me. I don't watch Celebrity Traders, but, you know, I've met him. He gave me an award once. So, you know,
what
he's...
for?
I can't remember. One of my many awards that I've won, okay?
For a new show called Changing Belen.
Very good.
That's
right.
Oh, wow. It's tickled him.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. But yeah, it's just not for me. As, to be fair, on most sitcoms, not for me. But this is, this is another one. Changing Ends, then, which enters its third series on ITV. When?
This is quite interesting scheduling-wise as well, actually. It started yesterday, Sunday, the 23rd, at 10:05, and it runs all week on ITV after I'm a Celebrity. I think that it's kind of like, yeah, I think it's a treat. I think it has a big, it's inheriting, yeah, I'm a Celebrity every night. So, I think it's a good thing. Yeah, runs a week and carries on probably the beginning of the following week.
Okay. Other things are out this week. There's a little show called Stranger Things, which drops on Netflix on Thursday, which obviously is heavily embargoed. We will cover that, not on Plus, but on the regular show next Monday. On the reg. So fear not, we'll get to talk about that then. There's also the Beatles Anthology, which is the Disney Plus Peter Jackson restored documentary, which we also couldn't see for this podcast. So that's on
Wednesday, by the way.
It is on Wednesday,
on
yes. On the Disney Plu. What else we got? Bay of Fire Series 2 on ITVX. That comes on Sunday. Yes. Should you wish to watch it?
Yes.
Have we missed anything else?
Prehistoric Planet, I say. Just the Apple's kind of lavish.
Which you're shilling for currently.
I did shill for, I did host a thing.
Does have mammoths. I do love
amazing,
a mammoth.
Amazing mammoth.
I love a mammoth.
Very, very good mammoth action. There's a Crims.
See, you know, we should ask Kay a question. Kay, what do you think of mammoths? Tell us right now, this second, what do you think of mammoths?
Yeah. Go. That's just shit.
What's that? What did you say? Talking around your chocolate? What was that?
Okay, I might have just had a chocolate. For sustenance, we've been going on for about 4 hours.
Fair.
Fair enough, yeah. There's a Chris Hemsworth documentary.
About mammoths, which was unexpected.
No, I've watched it. It's about he's gone on a road trip to remember with his dad, who's got who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
Mm. Oh, right.
Yeah.
And they've gone on a road trip in Australia, hoping that this sort of reminiscence therapy will help him, because it can halt the kind of speed at which in the dementia decline. You know,
he's become quite the kind of unscripted hero, hasn't he? He's done loads of these.
He has.
This one is particularly poignant because obviously it's with his family and with his dad, and it's really quite sweet. And also for anyone who's got family members, or it's quite useful. He's got a lot of useful information from doctors.
Interesting, yeah. So that's Chris Hemsworth, A Road Trip to Remember, on National Geographic and Disney Plus today, Monday the 24th of November, 9:00. Doc is another procedural. I think it might even be from the same team as Watson, but it's on Sky Witness now from Wednesday at 9:00, and that's the second season of that show, which we've previously entirely ignored. I think that's about it, yeah.
Okay, fabulous. Mm. What is our pick of the week?
Prisoner 951.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, has to be.
Agreed. Not Watson, sorry. Okay, that's it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. As ever, please do leave us a review. We would love a 5-star rating on whatever platform you should so choose. And also follow us on the socials. Kate was about to say something.
Yes, I was going to say we had a new review in, and I just wanted to give
No,
don't worry about it. It's fine.
It's never good news when you read out a review, though.
Well, no, I'm not going to read it out, but I just wanted to flag. I wanted to give a shout out to Robert Frost, who actually wrote in the style of Robert. He did a little kind of, poemy type thing. So you should look at that at your leisure.
We got a review from Robert Frost.
Yes.
This is amazing.
This is the guy.
This is Slow Horses editor, Robert Frost.
Yes.
Oh, actual Robert Frost.
Yeah, didn't
it's
realize.
It's not the poet.
No, I knew he wasn't the poet, but I didn't realize it was actually.
Yes.
I forgot that Robert Frost was the Our Slow Horses.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And
I just remember him writing in and us joking about Sir Robert Frost.
Yeah, our new favorite editor.
Oh. Absolutely.
Sorry, Darren.
Legend.
Poor Darren. Not only did he not get chocolates, but now he's not our favorite editor.
I mean, we're terrible, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. Sorry.
But okay, but crucially, so this is Robert Frost, the editor, but he has written a poem in the manner of Robert Frost, the poet. This is what you're telling me.
Well, he's written, I want you to read it, because I think you'll do it justice. I will mess it up,
so,
but it's very good.
One of two things has happened here. Either Robert Frost, the editor, who is clearly a very funny guy, has decided to write us a Robert Frost, the poet-esque review on Apple Podcasts, or someone else, being extremely meta, has decided to just review it as Robert Frost.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Could be anything.
I think it's Sir Robert Frost.
I'm gonna read this poem out.
Go on, James.
I'm gonna do it. You ready?
Best reading voice.
Okay. This is the latest review on Apple Podcasts for the podcast. Three voices gathered when new shows begin. James charting structure, pace, and theme. Kay gauging tone beneath the din, and Boyd, ever sly, would softly beam as he alluded to truths untold. They roamed through slow horses, muddy and sharp, then vaulted into the expanse's flight, picking apart each scene, each spark, what lands, what drags, what just feels right, their craft to judge what stories hold. And I strolled with them episode by episode, hearing debates on which paths thrive. They walk the road where pilots load their promise, hoping to survive. A weekly wander through the bold.
Very
That's
good.
Pretty good.
That's amazing. That's
a lot of
Very
effort's gone into
good.
That.
I mean, the actual original Robert Frost couldn't have done better.
No. Do you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's better than anything actual Robert Frost has ever written.
Yeah.
I'm giving that 5 stars.
5 stars for the poem, stars. 5 stars for the review.
Thank you very much.
Very happy with that.
Fantastic.
Love it.
We welcome all reviews. They don't have to be poems, but yes.
Do you know what? I think they should all be poems from now
don't
on.
Don't put people off leaving
if
us then, reviews.
Frankly, if you're not going to talk about us in iambic pentameter, I don't want to hear about it.
Stop alienating the listeners, James.
Fair enough. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at Pilot TV Pod. We are at Kay Ribeiro. We are at Boyd Hilson. And I am at James E. Dyer. On next week's show, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. We're going to be doing Stranger Things, which is exciting. But what else is out next week? I mean, you know how much I love a mammoth, but Mammoth is back for a second series, not actually about mammoths.
No.
Talamasca comes to Netflix, which is the Anne Rice Dark Universe spin-off show.
Oh,
it is the glue that sort of sticks Interview with the Vampire and the Mayfair Witches
are you sure that's
together.
Okay.
Boyd doesn't think it is. It may not be. Mm. It's in the calendar. Yeah. I may have put it there. Who knows?
I mean, you did put a couple of things in the calendar for November, which weren't actually until December.
Don't need to talk about
See,
that.
See, this is why we don't bother with the bloody calendar.
Don't need to talk about that. The Hunt comes to Apple TV on Wednesday. The Abandoned, which is the new Kurt Sutter show, that comes to Netflix. Very excited about that one. Spartacus, House of Asher, comes to MGM+. I'm also excited about that one. There's a lot going
on.
And
then the best or last.
The War Between the Land and the Sea lands on BBC One on Sunday.
Yes.
Almost all of these, I'm sure, will be embargoed. So I have literally no idea which ones we will or will not cover next week, but we will do Stranger Things next week. On this week's Pilot Plus, we will do something.
Mm.
I know not what. And guys, you know, it's that time of year. We are coming up on December. It's creeping up on us. We're going to have to talk our list of the shows of the year, and we're going to have to talk the review of the year podcast.
Cue the office punch up.
Yeah. So I don't know quite how we're going to attack this year.
Well, attack.
I mean, we could take a battle royale approach to it.
Why not?
Except me and Boyd would probably end up dead. So I'm not sure that's a good idea.
I know who I'd back in
Indeed.
Scenario.
Yeah. So let's maybe not do that. So I don't know. We'll work that out. But yes, keep your eyes and ears peeled for our review of the year special, which will probably go up between Christmas and New Year during that time when Boyd would like us to be working, but we're actually not.
Well, again, we have to deal with the fact that so the biggest shows are going to be on New Year's Day, and what do we do about that?
And I've personally said I am committed to doing it if you can get us screeners, Boyd, but have you pulled your finger out?
I seem to recall you said Boyd had to get us screeners and buy us lunch.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, James.
I think that
Christmas,
well, you can say
Christmas
what you like.
Well, listeners, let's just see how committed Boyd is to you.
You don't have to like make yourself, just get your chef to whip something up for us. We don't need you to actually cook it. It's fine.
I think it's definitely going to happen.
It's going to happen.
I feel it.
It's definitely going to happen.
Jesus Christ.
Round up Boyd's for Christmas Day. Excellent. That's it. We're done. See you next time. Pilot out.